Welcome, Rabbi Bernath. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. I'd love to hear a little bit about your background and what led you to become a Sharchan, known as the Love Rabbi, as well as your Shliach, where you are, and all the different topics and great things, as well as you have many productions on like the Little Avraham. And so you're quite multifaceted and in different areas. I'd love to hear about it.
I was raised in Chicago. I went to Cheder Lubavitch in Chicago, and then to the Misifta there. I was from the first class in the Misifta. And
What led you to have interest and want to pursue being a shliach and being a shadchan? I don't know which came first. I'm assuming becoming a shliach, but also the interest in when you and I met, you mentioned, because of my background in meditation and I was speaking with you about that, you mentioned teaching a course of Kabbalah, meditation, and Hasidus to your students. I believe you're at a college, correct?
yes. So I grew up really living and breathing Rebbe. Now it's already so many years, and people it's a rare it's a rarity. Gimel Tammuz happened when I was 12 years old. But growing up, literally as a young child, everything was about the Rebbe. We used to huddle around. I grew up in Chicago, so it wasn't like we could go to the Rebbe so often. And we would, we would huddle around the phone listening to the live vibrations. I mean, this was just, when every week there was a new sicha that would be edited and come out. It was just something that we lived and breathed. It's hard to describe what it's like today, being a child growing up in that era. But I always wanted to visit the Rebbe, and I bugged my parents day in and day out. My mother says that she, literally every single day I would come. When are we going? When are we going? When are we going? And finally, we took a trip as a family, and we drove from Chicago to New York, which is I think a 16 or 17 hour drive. I mean, without stops and with little kids. And this was it was the year of after Chaf Beis Shvat. So the Rebbe was still in the year for the Rebbetzin, and so the Rebbe would meet people at home primarily. And so we were so excited to be able to be there. I remember before I left, I went around to all my friends and I got shliach mitzvah and I got letters for the Rebbe, and I had like little. I was young. I was 8 or 9 years old, 8 years old. But it was an exciting moment. I remember the weeks before I couldn't wait. I was staying up picturing what it would be like to be, to meet the Rebbe. And even the whole time on the way there, there was just such an excitement. We lined up for dollars. I went with my mother because the women went first, and my parents thought it would be better if the kids went, didn't have to wait so long. And so we were waiting there. In my childhood mind, it was about 20 hours. It was probably about an hour and a half, really. And I could kind of see down the hallway, I could see the Rebbe's hands already. Like there was there, and I was just waiting and waiting, and my moment was coming up. And the Rebbe, my mother was holding my brother and sister. The Rebbe handed my mother a dollar and my sister a dollar, my brother a dollar, and spoke to my mother for a minute, and then right away they pushed us. I was devastated, completely devastated. I didn't get my moment. Before I could really process everything, somebody grabbed my collar. A woman grabbed my collar. And when I turned around to see what was going on, there was the Rebbe right there in front of my face. And he gave me a big smile. And he handed me a dollar and said, at the time, I was familiar with Yiddish. I mean, I still am. And he said, "Vester kemo nishvar gesen, I won't forget you."
Wow.
And that was it. And then they wished me away.
Wow.
I picture that smile maybe sometimes twice or three times a day still. It literally drives me, it motivates me, it excites me, challenges me. It was a just I again, you know, it's interesting how the Rebbe was able to connect with every person on their level. And here I was, just a child. I remember on the ride on the way home to Chicago, I said to my parents, "I'm going to be a shliach." And my mother said, "I don't know about that, but that's a good idea. I mean, I know you're very excited." And from that moment on, I didn't stop. Whatever I could. I mean, just so many decisions in my life against what others wanted me to do, what I should have done, drove me to be where I am today, and never looked back.
Wow. That's powerful. Thank you for sharing. So with that whole experience guiding you and leading it, still guiding you every day, what inspired you moving forward that you became a shliach to become a shadchan as well?
I don't know if I'm a shadchan. What ended up happening is
And
we
how
have a
did you assume the
shadchan.
title Love Rabbi then?
I'll tell you about that. We ended up our shluchas is primarily dealing with university students and young adults. The area that we live in has both a campus, but also it's a community of people who are post-campus and just getting started with their lives. And I saw that unless I started putting people together, it wasn't going to happen on its own. We would make these events and people would just show up and they would stay in their little bubbles with their two, three friends. And then they would say, "There's nobody for me." And unless I actually said, "Hey, Michelle, what do you think of Rob over there?" Or, "Hey," you know, that was how it started.
Nice.
And then beyond that, we'd have all the people and I would. Let's say in the beginning, after an event or after something, I would follow up, "Hi, how are you doing?" And I just started setting people up. I had no idea what I was doing, but I just knew that there was just, you know, the Rebbe said the fire is burning. And when the fire is burning, you don't ask questions. So I didn't ask questions. I just started setting people up. It led me to a lot of problems too. It wasn't that easy. And I knew I needed some kind of organized way of doing that. And so I went and looked for some kind of way that I could set people up. Also, at one point, I had set this young woman up, and she said, "Rabbi, you set me up 2 weeks ago with somebody, and we're still dating. Why are you setting me up again?" I said, "Okay, I need a way to know who's dating, who's not dating. Like, I need some kind of way to do this." And so that led to creating J Matchmaking. It really originally started as J Montreal because I was focusing just on Montrealers, and that allowed me to be able to make these matches in an organized fashion. It's not public. There was nothing, you know, it wasn't like people were swiping at the time when I started it. There was no swiping yet, but and then it just and it allowed me to start, I guess, matchmaking. I didn't even know what I was doing. For me, I just wanted to put Jews together. I knew that if no one's doing it, someone has to do it. This is such an important part of this generation. If we don't have Jewish families, what is all the story and all the fighting for and everything? You know, there's such a conversation today about anti-Semitism, but if there's no pro-Semitism, what's the point of anti-Semitism? And the Love Rabbi came about because maybe this is about 2014 or 2015. There was a front page right around this time of year, because of this time of year is always associated with love and relationships. The one of the largest French newspaper in Montreal did an entire expose about what I was doing.
Wow.
They called me, the title of it was Le Rabbin de l'amour. It sounds much better in French.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds much better.
That
And so right afterwards, a number of articles came out. The Montreal Gazette did an article, and then the English articles called me the love rabbi. And then a couple producers at CBC got a hold of me and decided they wanted to do a documentary about what I was doing. And they called it the love rabbi. So I in the beginning, I mean, do I look like a love rabbi to you? I've always thought it was a really cheesy title, but it's a moniker that I have to live with, and I'll just take one for the team. You know, if it's good for the Jews, it's good for me.
How did it pick up popularity, so to speak, that that the everybody was hearing about it, that it got
I
into
don't
the
know.
news, you know, just
Yeah,
like
it just happened. I
you
mean,
were
it started
having
off as
success from the like the couples that you were just in that need, like you noticed that you had to put couples together, like people were getting married and
Yeah, it's, what happened was there. Somebody was at, saw me at a wedding, and then they this is actually they were filmmakers, and they thought it was really interesting that I put people together and that I'd use this old school matchmaking in the secular world, right? That the idea of shadchanis is in the religious world, but I do that for secular people. And now they saw this really secular couple that I was marrying that I had put together, and they said, "We want to do a film on you." That film actually never came out. I've actually been asking them recently for the footage. But she was also a writer, and so she's at this wedding, and she's talking to different people, and everyone's like, "Yeah, Rabbi Bernath set me up with my husband. Here's my husband. Here's my wife." And she like saw, I don't know, just happened to be at that wedding. I think there was maybe eight or nine couples that I had set up, and she's like, "This is insane. This guy,
Wow.
you know, is really doing something."
Yeah.
So she started that, and she wrote the article, and I think that article really made it popular. And from there, it became, you know, and then it just started building up press. And then this documentary, which was later nominated for a Canadian Screen Award, which is like the Canadian Oscars, then it really became popular in Canada, and I guess then beyond Canada.
Wow, Baruch Hashem. That's cool to hear. So diving into that process now, I'd love to hear a little bit about how for myself, you know, and look in shidduchim and other people that listen, what are you as a shadchan looking for that it makes you think, oh, this person might go well with this other person?
You want to know the secrets. Before I tell you the secrets of matchmaking, which is fine, I can tell you, because it's not a secret. I think everyone should be a matchmaker. I think you can be a matchmaker of one, of two, of three. In order to combat the cri what they say is the crisis. I don't know if it's really a crisis, but we'll say it's a crisis. In order to combat the crisis, we need to all be matchmakers. I think it first starts with, I used to say that the hardest job in the world is matchmaking, but I don't agree with that anymore. I think the hardest job in the world is dating. And I think it first starts, before it's matchmaking, it starts with dating and knowing yourself, knowing who you are, trying to understand who you are. Instead of saying, "What are you looking for?" say, "Who am I? And what do I bring to the relationship?" And then you'll be able to find your complement. Singles come to me with these long lists of things that they want, and majority of that has nothing to do with what they really want. Before I even knew anything about matchmaking, when I was dating, my mother, who, you know, as in the firm world, often the parents are the ones who take care of a lot of the process of dating. My mother asked me, "What are you looking for?" And I smiled and I said, "You know, I've lived in dorms my most of my life at this point." I was still in yeshiva when she had asked me this. So I'd spent the past 10 years in dormitories. And forget about the marriage. Marriage, I don't know about, but I do know what it's like to live with somebody. I've had roommates for the past 10 years. And having a roommate is a really complicated thing. So outside of marriage and outside just the roommates, I said the truth is, I just want to know if in the bedroom, when they sleep, do they like it hot or cold? Because I knew there's no way that I could live with somebody who had to have the heat
At
very
open.
high when they slept. It was a very practical thing. Why I'm saying that is because so often we think of these ideas that don't matter, but really it's about the practical. There's a practical element of living together, then there's a practical element of a trajectory. Where are you going? Where are you headed? I'm not sure. There's a big debate of where you come from. I mean, attraction is similarity, so there should be some level of similarity. So I think to answer your real question, a basis of similarity with a trajectory and then a couple practical things. So I start off when I meet with singles, I say specific is terrific. Tell me something specific about yourself. Obviously outside of the weather, I call it the weather, you know, your age, your rank, your serial number, all those things that are obvious that you just do what I call the business card, right? But beyond the business card, what's specific about you?
What are
Then I
some,
want to
yeah.
know what are things that fixed or flexed? What are you flexible on? What are you fixed on? For every non-negotiable, you have to have a lot of things that you're negotiable on. You have to
Interesting.
negotiate. You can't only have non-negotiables, then there's nowhere to work. We're working with two people to get here. So you need to have things that you have non-negotiables, which are important, and then you have to have things that you'll negotiate on. It's a process that I go through with a lot of the singles about how to figure this out. But I would say three things I can't live with, three things I can't live without, and the rest of it is gravy.
What are some examples of like the specifics that you mentioned? Like
I don't know, somebody has, Shlomo, think of you. Like, what are you specific? What's something that'll say something that is unique about you? Specific is terrific. What's unique about you?
what's unique about me? Well, I mean me.
Yeah,
That's unique
but
about me.
give me something.
I would say my, I think this would go into it, but my approach in life with merging, you know, holistic health and with Hasidus, and how it's how everything is interconnected, and that's all important.
So,
But also, I would
you're
say a very
looking.
the genuinity.
So holistic health and Hasidus, that's unique about you, which means you want someone who automatically, that tells me you want someone who you can carry an intellectual conversation with, somebody who cares about their health, who cares about, who's more who's more natural.
Yeah. Does that go into the specific aspect, or would that
That's
fall
very
into
specific.
flexible?
That's
Yeah.
very specific. Absolutely. People say, oh, I want to cast a wide net. That doesn't work. You want to cast a specific net because there's only one person that you need. There's only one person you're looking for. So specific is much better than casting a wide net. And as a matchmaker, I'm thinking of in my head of the Rolodex of all the people I know. The more specific I have, the easier it is for me to find somebody.
So how do you help the individuals? One thing I learned when it comes to also like in the practice of meditation and visualization or goal setting, specific is very important. But how do you differentiate specificity from narrow-mindedness?
Well, I think that's, you can see right away, somebody, it's not narrow-mindedness necessarily. When it comes to dating, it's going to be someone who's open to new experiences or closed to new experiences. So somebody who's more, they'd say stubborn or narrow-minded is really somebody who's more close to new experiences, which is fine. It's just Either they're, so it depends on it. If they're young, it just means that they're somebody who likes routine. So we have to find somebody who's okay with routine or somebody who can expand their horizon a little bit. If they're older, older singles are different because they're more set in their ways. So that's gets a little more complicated. They've been living alone for longer. They've have certain routines. They have certain things. So sometimes I have to say to them, I want you to clear out half of your closet, sleep on one side of your bed, sit at one chair of your table. You have to feel like there's something missing in your life. If you don't feel like there's anything missing, if you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you say, I'm happy, it's all good, then there's no need for someone else. To start bringing somebody into your life that's complete, there's no space for them. A lot of singles, they spend their time on their career. They don't have physical time. You know, you set them up on a date and they don't have time for that date. That there's no space for someone in their life. That's fine. Just don't clog up the system. It's okay. You don't have to. No one told you you have to be ready for a relationship right now. But don't date thinking that, oh, something's going to change when it's really has nothing to do with the other and it's all about you.
Wow. The two things I want to go back, like, what if, how do you help somebody if they have a challenge or a difficulty with that specific, getting specific? You know, like I find, let's say, like I have health coaching practice. So when I help an individual, let's say they want to break a habit, and I encourage them to create a vision of what they're looking for, somewhat similar, but they have that difficulty with the being specific. Maybe because it's they feel like specific is narrow-minded, or just not accessing the creative part of their brain so much. What would you, how do you encourage or assist them in that?
I think it's a really good question. A lot of the first thing is matchmaking. A lot of people think matchmaking is introducing. Just find me someone. That's not what matchmaking is. That's introducing. That's one part of matchmaking, actually, the smallest part of matchmaking. Well, it's not really the smallest part, but could be. Matchmaking is actually three parts. Introducing, the coaching and the mentoring, and the closing. It could be one matchmaker who does all three, or you could have three separate matchmakers. But you need that coaching mentoring part of it is critical to the matchmaking process. Now, there are some people who get through it without that. But I would say most people need the coaching and mentoring. Now, some people, there's I'm generalizing here, because this is for a broader audience. But generally speaking, there are three types of people. There are I people, you people, and we people. Majority of the world, they need to talk it out with somebody. There's a couple people who are I people. They know exactly what they're looking for, and they are going to wait and they're going to hold off until they get it. They're the I people. They know who they are, and you're not going to tell them otherwise. Then there's the you people. The you people are the people who have to be chosen. Whoever says yes to them, they're gonna say yes. They have to be chosen. But the vast majority of the world has to talk it out. So what do they end up doing? They end up talking it out to somebody on the bus, to some random person who they're never gonna see again, when they actually that's a wasted conversation. What you really want is somebody who will get to know you, who can be your mashpia, who can be your mentor, who can really get to know you. And especially when it comes to dating, that is such a critical, critical part. Majority of dating is there's so many emotions and there's hormones and there's so many things that are going on in a person. They need an outside source. So I would say you need three people during the dating process for yourself. You need the matchmaker. The matchmaker's job is to set you up and push the match. They have to believe that the greatest thing that ever happened since sliced challah is getting you married and making this match happen. That's somebody pushing the match. You need a friend, someone who you can speak, one friend, somebody you can speak on talk it out on an equal level. And most importantly, you need a mashpia, you need a mentor, you need somebody who, whatever they say, even if you don't like what they're saying, you're going to listen to them. And that person, if they truly know you and they care about you, will be the person who will be able to answer those questions for you about being specific. Because every person reacts differently, and there's different reasons. I can think of, just off the top of my head, six or seven different reasons why somebody would be in that particular situation.
Well, in the earlier you mentioned that a person must feel that they're having that lacking. But so how much, but at the same time we were talking about individual as work on themselves, and often we attract who we are. So in a sense, I once learned that if you get clear on the type of person you want to marry and become that person, so to speak, obviously not exactly because you're marrying the opposite gender, hopefully, but
Looking for same another.
yeah, but if you want somebody that's compassionate, you have to work on your compa being a compassionate person. So in a sense, it comes off that I have to be in a place of wholeness to welcome in and attract that person. But that is so, but at the same time, you have to, like you mentioned, feel that lack. But like we especially learn as with Chassidus and meditation, that when we're in a state of living as if we're already, like the Rebbe taught about living with Mashiach. When we're in a state that I'm in alignment with my goal, in this case, the person I want to marry, I can't be in a place of lack. In a sense, like, where is she? Why isn't she here yet? I have to be in a place of wholeness, correct?
So let me share the screen in a second. I want to show you something. I think this is a big, this is a often a misnomer. I think this is often a mistake. We often,
Did that help?
yeah, we often emotions with personalities with with what we're looking for. So this is one example. There's many examples, but this is one example. If you're looking for the other half of your soul, let's pretend that this is a picture. I'll explain it to you in a second. By the way, there's lots of things just like this. This is one that I happen to like. So let's start off with openness, right? In a relationship, there needs to be a certain amount of imagination, feelings, actions, ideas. One side of it is the practical, conventional, somebody who prefers routine. And the other side of it is someone who's curious. They could complement each other. The person who prefers routine can complement the person who's curious, the person who has a wide range of interests, the person who's independent. When it comes to number two, conscientiousness, right? Someone who's self-disciplined that you're talking about, someone who is complete. So you, if somebody is not, it's okay because the hardworking, dependable, organized can complement the impulsive, careless, and disorganized. So you think you have to have everything figured out. You don't want to have, especially as a young single, you don't want to have everything figured out. But often, what David Snarch, a psychologist, says is that you will be as what he calls differentiated. You will be as differentiated as the person, or less than the person that you'll marry, which means, yes, if you develop yourself and become a better person, you'll probably attract somebody who is more differentiated. If you're less differentiated, you'll attract someone who's less differentiated. But that person will meet you where you are because the purpose is that the two of you will be on a trajectory together. So you want someone who's going to be at a similar path, at a similar space than you are. So often we get confused with, oh, it needs to be this kind of person or that kind of person, or I have to be perfect, or that's all the Yetzirah. That's all gibberish in your head. You be you, understand you, and wherever you are, as differentiated as you are at that moment, you're going to find someone. And that person will be perfect for you because the two of you will then grow together.
Sounds like it's also really important to know the trajectory that the person is on. Like if you want to grow, that they're also growing.
Obviously, if you're not somebody, you know, if you want to just chill and watch Netflix, then yeah, that's, then yeah, there's different people who are attracted. You know, some people like that. They just want to be life. I say that you'll have two different types of basharts. This is my made up thing. But you'll have a yes, dear, someone who just says yes, 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 or someone who is what the Torah says, an ezer kenegdo, someone who is a helpmate against you, who challenges you, who causes you to be better. But often there are some people who like the yes, dears. They don't want to be challenged. They don't want to grow.
And that's okay.
I don't think it's okay, but I didn't make choices for you. Only you make choices for yourself. I can't tell you what to do.
Well, I heard once, I haven't read it inside yet, but that there's a Gemara that you have to look for your wife as if you're looking for a lost object.
Yeah, I heard that. I've seen that.
Can you explain a little bit that, you know, because some people, when they say there's a lost object in this room, they're going to throw the room crazy around.
A lot of people, I've heard a lot of different commentaries on this particular Gemara. But what they don't realize is the Gemara is talking about men.
The man Why is I'm the boss that, or the man is
it's
the
that
one
the man it. Needs to go search for the
search
woman.
Search his wife.
It's the man's job to search for the wife. So beyond all the commentaries on this, which are wonderful, yes, you have to look. You have to look. It's the man's job. It's the woman's job to make sure that she's findable and be found. But it's the man's job to look for her. And we need to empower men more to realize their objective in this process. They have to be the ones looking.
So how much would you say work needs to be done on oneself, as we spoke about, and how much actually looking out and connecting with a sharkan or doing external work, so to speak? But often it seems also one of the things we touched on is when you're working on yourself and you're getting unclear on those things, different synchronicities or hashkacha pratis moments come up that somebody says, oh, hey, are you dating? I had this, you know, let me keep you in mind.
There is. Once you get the ball rolling, you don't know where it's going to roll. And that's the point. You got to get the ball rolling. The critical person is the mashpia, is the mentor in that. Yeah. This question will be answered by the mashpia. And also having that, you know, so often I'll be coaching a single and I don't actually set them up. But as a result of the coaching, they end up being set up and they end up getting into a relationship because the coaching is as important to a certain extent. I can't say it's more important because you got to find the human, but to a certain extent, it is more important because the coaching can't start once you find the human. You need to have a relationship with your coach, with your mentor before you find the human. And so I very easily give you generalizations and answers to these questions, but I don't think they're going to be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Because each person is different and that person needs to understand who they are.
So perhaps for a brief, because it's also a big conversation and the Rebbe has many guidelines on having on a Seila HaRav, making yourself a teacher. But sometimes I'll say I'll have to just speak in my experience, but it leads to the question of determining your mashpia, and to the point, like you said, that even when they say something that you don't like, you listen to. But sometimes I have cases, I've had a case, before that at least it seemed that it was empowering myself, so to speak, putting the decision more in my hands, with the ball in my hands, when they may say something, but it didn't feel like it's really aligned with where I feel Hashem or the Rebbe is guiding me towards.
The Rebbe said, when he spoke about Mashpia, that Hashem will give the right words for the Mashpia to say. Your trust, and we often confuse faith and trust, your trust in the Mashpia will make sure the Mashpia has the right words to say. So even if it's not aligned with what you think it is, well, that was the point. If you wanted to just hear an echo of your own words, then you could have just looked in the mirror and spoken to yourself. You're going to someone who you trust, and that's a critical element, and we can talk about that and expand that and unpack that at a later date. But trust is such a critical element. If you trust this person, that they have your best interest and they are someone who has the right answers, then they will have the right answers for you.
Is the Mashpia one of his roles to be there to help empower you to listen to yourself, though?
If that's the
Like
kind of person.
sometimes listening to Hashem's guidance, so to speak, is listening to that Mashpia. And so, like, listening to oneself can mean sometimes listening to the Mashpia, and also sometimes,
If that's the kind of person you are, then your mashpia will know that you need to make your own choices.
Beautiful.
That's part of
Yeah.
knowing the person that's in front of you.
That
Some
resonates.
people do need to listen to themselves and they don't have an opportunity to, and so the mentor will know that.
And they'll encourage them to, like, the ball, you make decision.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes maybe I think I had that tendency that sometimes, like, I just want this person to tell me what to do, because maybe I'm afraid of making a mistake or the case. But for them to be like, no, like, have confidence in yourself, make this decision, go for it. My mashpia once said that ain chacham kebal nesoyin.
Exactly.
There's no wiser person than he who make does the experience.
Experience is everything.
Yeah.
And that's part of the Mashpia's job, is it's someone who has the experience, someone who has done what you want to do. That when it comes to a Mashpia or a mentor, the person that you want is someone who has done what you want to do. Which means you don't want a mentor about marriage who's not been married or has been married three times. If you're someone who wants a long-lasting and healthy relationship, then your mentor needs to be someone who is married with a long-lasting and healthy relationship. Because essentially, what you want to do is glean from their experience and learn from them how they did it, or they will help you on your way, but they also can glean from their own experience. How they did it may not be how you want to do it, but they have the experience to be able to guide you in the right path.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. I think that also provides a lot of insight. Very simple to, look at the type of person you want to model your life after. So, in our closing, could you also share a little bit about that meditation slash Kabbalah course that you, I think you still give it to your class, your
Yeah,
students?
right now we generally the Jewish world has pivoted since October 7th, but I plan on bringing it back very soon. Yeah, I mean I never studied any Eastern meditations of any sort, and so at some point, as a bacher, I was told that you have to meditate on your Chassidus before you daven. And I used to ask mashpiyim and yeshiva, like, what does that mean? How do you do that? Like, what do I do? I'm going to learn Chassidus, and what do I do? Like, I want to be able to do this properly.
Yeah.
And over time, I think I developed, based on Chassidic teachings, a way to be able to do that. I mean, there's different types of meditation. This is for a longer conversation, but the idea of kavana, what we're really trying to do is we're an attunement of focus meditation. It's just this idea of really focusing your mind. You can only have one thought at a time. If you don't like the thought, you can change that thought. And teaching your mind to focus your thought. And instead of just using some random affirmation, you can actually use something that of value and of meaning to you. And that's the basis behind it.
Beautiful. Yeah, this is, thank God I've had many other, you know, conversations, not just on the podcast about this topic. But I'm very interested in, you know, continuing the conversation with you on that and that course. But perhaps, God willing, another time.
Absolutely.
But anyways, Rabbi Bernath, it's been a pleasure having you on. Thank you very much for coming in and sharing a little bit about your background and your inspiration and what, you know, the awesome, funny experience that led you into becoming a Shadchan and all of the tips that you shared, because it's also important stuff, even if not if, just for the health, you know, of an individual. This is a health, holistic health podcast, and merging with Chassidus, but just being clear on those values in oneself, even if you're not in a place of wanting to date just yet, is very healthy as a for your whole self. So thank you very much.
My pleasure is mine. We'll speak soon.
Sounds great. Have a wonderful week.